Hello, and welcome to the BIM Academy Digital Climate Podcast. Thank you for taking the time to listen to us today. I'm Bola Abisogun OBE, Digital Director here at BIM Academy, and I'll be talking with some of our friends and knowledge experts around the world on the topic of big data, information management, building safety, and the pragmatic delivery of the golden thread en route to a net zero future within the AEC industry. It has been a little over 5 years since we saw the introduction of a new Building Safety Act. The Act was updated and received royal assent in April 2022 with the ambition of tightening up both regulation and cultural work practices within the UK's built environment. My guest and I, over the course of this series, will be reviewing the demand for digital skills and the plethora of new tools available, such as the emerging digital twin solution, in addition to other new and future regulatory requirements. I would like to introduce my guest, Chris Blythe, OBE, one of the longest serving chief executives at a professional body in the UK. For almost 20 years, Chris led the Chartered Institute of Building until his retirement in May 2019. Leading a 184-year-old organization and keeping it relevant was no easy feat. Chris transformed the CIOB into the modern international institute we see today, able to adapt to the changing needs of its members in an industry undergoing a digital revolution. Chris helped establish the discipline of construction management as a chartered profession, and under his stewardship, the awarding of an NCIOB can now be compared to a bachelor's honours degree. Chris held the industry and government to account on politically sensitive agendas such as modern slavery and corruption in construction. He's also championed the industry and the vital role it plays in social mobility, job creation, and the quality of life. Today, Chris is currently non-executive chairman of SECBE Limited and enjoys a quiet life on Alderney in the Channel Islands. Welcome, Chris, and thank you for coming.
And thank you for having me, Bola. Thank you very much indeed.
And just to start, I mean, we've been talking for years about all sorts of things. And now we find ourselves in 2023, Chris, the year that the Building Safety Act comes to life. I mean, what does it mean for you? What does the Act present for you as a seasoned industry practitioner?
Well, I think the Act for me represents an opportunity for the industry to get its house in order. The fact that we need a Building Safety Act is actually very disappointing, and I think represents a humiliation for the industry because it shows that we failed dramatically and let a lot of people down. That's not good.
I think you're right. I think is there perhaps a moment of reflection? Is the Act potentially a moment in time when the entire sector needs to take a good look at itself?
Well, absolutely. And I think what the Building Safety Act is suggesting and the processes it is demanding, particularly for the high-rise, high-risk buildings, I don't see why they can't be applied throughout the industry, even on the most modest home, on the modest refurbishment. I mean, you know, concepts such as the golden thread, what's so difficult about that? Haven't we got it in place already?
And, you know, it's funny you say that. I mean, it's been, what, 5.5 years now since Grenfell Tower. Right. And I was devastated. I watched the fire unravel all night. I remember it so clearly. And yet, Chris, 5.5 years later, many clients that currently own in-scope buildings, right, haven't even had the urgency around nominating an accountable person, for example. Right. What do you think needs to happen from a people perspective on how they interpret the new legal requirement? I mean, you know, at a basic level, what is it that people need to understand?
Well, I can sense you're a bit frustrated about the fact that people have actually done nothing so far, 5.5 years in. And I just think that a lot of people in the property and construction industry have been in denial, thinking that the legislation will never happen. and they won't really mean anything. And if we ignore it, it'll go away because they can't enforce it. And that's part of the culture change that Judith Hackett was saying. You know, you can bring in legislation and you can maybe force some compliance here, but we need a fundamental culture change. And that, I'm afraid, is going to be the hardest thing. And if people aren't going to change in the industry, we've got to seriously look at changing the people. Get new people in. Get rid of this lot because they're not doing anyone any good.
You know, I laugh, and perhaps I shouldn't, but you know, I've come to that conclusion recently. I've said, you know, I have conversations that talk about my peer group, you know, the 50 somethings of the world who are actually in positions of relative authority and influence. Actually, in the context of the Building Safety Act, they are now decision makers, right? But yet, some of the conversations I've had around, you know, how do we actually do this? You know, I often start from a position that says, well, actually, let's just look at the core legal requirement, right? Which from a builder's perspective, from a constructor's perspective, talks about the creation and maintenance of the golden thread of information management in an accessible digital format, right? And then I stop there. And Chris, how would you help people unpack that statement?
Well, I'd go even back a further stage. You know, to get a building approved for occupation, you've got to prove it's a safe building.
Correct.
So start with that. It's not the regulator's job to prove it's a safe building. It's the builder and developer's job to prove it's a safe building. So you, as the developer and builder, what information do you need to put together to convince the regulator that this is a safe building and also convince people who are going to go into the building? Now, if you start at that, that will drive what you need for the golden thread, you know, the sorts of information you need. So, for example, getting behind paneling and actually maybe having photographs of things such as fire breaks. Are they there? You can't just say, oh, we put them in. Well, because we know in the past they've not been put in. They've been put in wrongly. So the industry can't say just trust us because it failed in the past. So it has to take the steps to prove that buildings are safe. And, you know, the building is either safe or it's not. You can't have, well, it's sort of safe. It's like being saying, I'm sort of pregnant. Well, you are or you aren't. So I think the challenge here is the industry has to prove to the regulator. I don't think the regulator has to prove anything. The industry has to prove to the regulator, because otherwise the regulator becomes the quality assurance arm of the builder. And actually, they're not there. The builder has to build in his own quality assurance processes. So ask yourself, what do I need to prove this building safe? And that will answer the questions about the information you need to be able to put together in that golden thread. It covers everything from design. It covers everything from procurement. It covers everything through the construction processes. It shows how it was done. It has examples of things you've done. So maybe photographs behind panels and what have you. It is all there laid out in a digitally accessible form, which can be used by anybody who wants to say, I need to know that this building is safe. What's difficult about that?
You know, historically, we would be talking about O&M manuals, right, as the first port of call to reflect at least what was built, right? But I've had this recent conversation, Chris, that talks about, I actually put a post on LinkedIn, and I'm challenging the sector around as-built information, right? Is as-built actually what was built is my real question, right? And in the context of proving to, say, for example, the regulator, is O&M's the right cohort of information?
Probably not. I think we need to redesign that, because you've got to get behind everything that's been done. You've got to record the processes. You've got to record the work that's being done. I mean, the great thing now is, you know, digitizing it is relatively straightforward. I mean, a few years ago, I went to see a job being done at the Atomic Energy Authority at Aldermaston. And they're building a new explosive manufacturing facility.
Wow.
So you can imagine a very sensitive building. Every yard of the rebar was being photographed to show what was there before they filled it all in. You can see all the ties, all the different thicknesses of the rebar, where the super strong bits were, where the less strong bits. They were photographing every single inch of that work because they needed to know that it was right. Mm. And if something went wrong, they could go back and see. why can't we do that? It means, you know, people will have to spend a little bit more time and effort on in recording stuff, but better to record it and find your mistakes out at the start than actually in 15 years' time go back and have to redo a whole building. And I think part of this, you know, how do you change the culture? I said earlier, you legislation can change some behaviors. And I think Judith Hackett said that back in 2017. But the way you change culture is what drives culture in construction, and that's money.
Correct.
And you've got to use money to make people change their culture. And if it becomes so expensive to get it wrong, you'll spend the money to get it right.
Agreed.
And, you know, I've seen that.
The Act talks about competence.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's where the fear has kicked in. Yeah. Rightly or wrongly, I do not think the industry that we're in has appreciated competence in the manner that it should have done. And I think Grenfell Tower brought that to light in the worst possible way, right? But how do we get competency levels to a point where it becomes normal to consider your accountability for what you do? How do we get that to a level where every person in the industry, regardless of position or contribution, recognizes that I've got to bring my A game to work every day?
Well,
how do we do that?
I think it comes back to the people who carry the risk. You know, insurers carry a risk. Other people carry the risk. They're the ones who've got to be saying, I don't want to be insuring a firm where you haven't got the competence. You show me that you're competent, and that will reflect, you know, your insurance premiums for doing this work. I've got to live with a building for 15 years. You want me to insure it, and your liability as a developer or what have you, prove to me you're competent. And this is where I think, again, you turn everything around, and the industry has to prove to the insurers that they're competent, the regulator they build safe buildings, because it's not the industry being told what to do. You know what to do. Prove you're competent. So how do I prove it? I've got to put these systems in place. I've got to ensure this training is done, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, so that you can actually build up that portfolio that the firm is competent and the people in it are competent. You could have lots of individuals who are competent, but you've got to make sure that the synergy is there, that the whole organization is competent as well. I think this is part of the role, I think, of the people who are, you know, investing in these firms. And I put the term investing loosely. You've got shareholders, of course, but I think insurers invest in firms, you know, in terms of, you know, writing policies for them. It's not just, oh, well, you know, we'll win some, we'll lose some. I don't think insurance companies want to lose any of them. And they could have a big part to play in saying, no, you get your house in order. You know, we need you to get the banks. So we're not going to lend you money unless we know you're competent, because, you know, we fund you doing a big development. It turns out to be rubbish. And, you know, we're then having to fund the redevelopment of it. Why are we doing that? So, yeah, I think that other parts of the process can have a big part in driving things like competence.
You know, I don't know whether this is good or bad, because the focus thus far has been the prevention of fire spread and structural collapse, right? I think that's a red flag, number one. And I'm not sure whether it's being communicated about the wider potential risk pool for existing assets to be able to prove that in the context of Grenfell. And so there's got to be an easier way for a building owner to prove that the asset is safe for occupation in the context of fire spread and structural collapse. And I think that's where a lot of people are struggling. But if O&M's...
I don't know why they struggle on that. Why do they struggle on that? I mean, you know, you can work it out whether it's safe or not. You know, have you used the right processes? Have you used the right materials? Have you actually done the construction properly? If you're not sure about any of them, you can't prove that the building's safe for those parameters. So why does it get more complicated, Bo? That's what I wonder. Why do people want to make this more complicated than it needs to be?
You know, for me, like I've said before, Chris, this is the year that everything changes, right? Mm-hmm. I'm excited, but I'm still nervous, because I do not see the urgency from asset owners around preparedness. From a London perspective, for example, there are 3,000 in-scope buildings, in many ways yet to be identified and registered with an accountable person. But I don't believe the asset owners from a public sector are even anywhere near ready. Like, what on earth do we do, Chris? What more can we do as a sector?
Well, I have to say, I that's what stumps me. People don't want to do it, or they'll have to live the consequences. I mean, the Act does provide provisions for individuals to be held criminally liable.
Correct. You
know, maybe get someone in jail. Maybe they'll get the finger out when the first person goes to jail. But that's not really the solution to the problem.
Exactly.
People need to be getting on and doing it. And even if they register or start the registration process, it's not fully
correct.
Right, at least they're in the process. They can update it and improve what they've got, but just get on with it, you know.
Well, let's flip it, because actually I've been having lots of conversations with the client side, whether they be design teams, supply chains, and clients themselves, who they're aware or much more aware. But let's just flip it for a minute. Is the building safety regulator ready to begin to receive the volume of information management processes and procedures that equate to safety case reports? Is the regulator ready for this change at the moment? I hope they will be in October, but are they ready right now?
Well, I think they'll be starting to be ready in April. I mean, that's why they've put the call in for, you know, to start opening the registration.
I've seen it.
I mean, you've got to get registered by October. So I'm assuming that they are ready for that. But also, by the time we get to October, they've got to get Gateways 2 and 3 in operation as well.
Exactly.
They're starting to see the flow of information. Having said that, though, coming back to the way, if I was doing the regulator's role, you know, when you get to sort of Gateway 3, the occupation side, you know, that's where you make the industry come up with the evidence, you know, because you've got to do this in various stages. You want to prove to me this building is fit for occupation. Okay, show me. So Gateway 3, you could do as very distinctively from Gateway 2, like starting construction, because that's
correct.
Taking building control and going beyond it and so forth. But Gateway 3, I would say if anyone's got a building coming up towards completion in the next 6 to 9 months, they need to make sure they've got all the evidence being accrued in a proper way that easily accessible, that they can then take to the building safety regulator and say, I can prove our building is safe. It meets all the requirements, and just go through with it like a, you know, proper portfolio. And this is the evidence, and just nail it, you know, because when they do, they'll think, well, this is so easy. But if they don't do that and the regulator says, no, I can't see that safe, they've got a lot more work to do. And they'll have said, thinking, well, we missed our opportunity to get this right when we could have done. So, yeah, just get on with it. Start building the portfolio of evidence to show you're building safe.
I think, you know, and I've tried not to use this term, because I'm a big fan of digitization and obviously digital twins, as you know. Yeah. But, you know, Chris, I can't see any other way of asset owners on the one hand and design teams and contractors on the other hand being able to produce exactly the point you make without the concept of a digital twin on completion of the build process, right? But to do that, Chris, the entire sector needs to upskill on digital skills, right? This is the elephant in the room. Now, again, we are embarrassingly low levels of digital maturity, right?
Yeah.
What's the silver bullet on that one?
Well, I think initially, and I'm being facetious a little bit, Bowler, but I think the upskilling on the digital skills, I think will initially be being able to use a scanner to scan all the paper documents. and then you have a CD ROM with all the documents that are on paper on there. So, well, here's our golden thread, and we've digitized it. Of course, we all know what that is, but that's where I think a lot of them will go. You know, we'll upskill someone to use a scanner.
Do you know what? If I said to you, Chris, that some in the sector are defining a digital format as paper-based. What would you say?
I'm not surprised. That's the scanner mentality, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and it's just scanner. How on earth can you define digital format as paper? Right? And potentially that may be acceptable.
I think you have to start from somewhere. And if at the end of the day, by putting paper records in a digital format is a precursor to actually doing everything digitally to start with, you know, that may be it, because we have to start from where we are. We've got a Neanderthal construction industry.
Yeah. You
know, we're not even in the 21st century. A lot of it is still pretty Neanderthal. And they're still doing things very much the way cavemen did them. You know, you knock a big hole in things and hope it doesn't fall down. You know, come on.
True.
The Romans recognize what our industry does, you know. You know, they say, oh, you're still using concrete. I see. Oh, we invented that. We're asking for a lot, but it needs to be done, because the amount of data that's going to be required is too much to be handled on paper.
Agreed. And I take your point. I mean, yeah, okay, converting paper to PDF, submitting that, yeah. But for those that still think that paper-based submissions will suffice as part of the safety case report, I mean, they're not even in the room of the conversation, really. And they're out there. They're out there.
Yeah. But the challenge will be is to find systems that can talk to each other from many different suppliers, and where you don't have to buy into a one system to be able to create this. Because I think that will just create a monopoly. It'll stifle innovation, and you'll end up with something which does the job on a compliance level. If it was a prescribed system, I think you still need to have the opportunity that you have an aim to get at, which is easily accessible information, easily transferable. You can link stuff together, but it will still be open enough to allow innovation, because the one thing we need in all of this is more and more innovation, because we're going to have to find ways of being able to take the golden thread and develop it over the next 30, 40, 50 years. So having a very prescriptive system will probably hold us back in that.
Agreed. And, I think back to your time at CIRB as chief exec, and you know, I've watched you for years, Chris, and I've admired your work, and I've commended you on many things. And in the context of some of those challenges which I noted, what was, from a leadership perspective, what was your major challenge around the change that you didn't see quickly enough? What was the, if there was one or two, what was it that leadership wasn't doing during your tenure at CIOB?
Well, that's easy. The leadership wasn't accepting responsibility. It was always someone else's fault. You know, it was the subcontractors.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you chose your subcontractors. Oh, well, yeah, but our subcontractors let us down. No, but you chose them, so it's your fault.
Correct.
And that's, I think, the thing that was probably the most aggravating and grieving thing that I came across, was leadership would not accept responsibility for what happened in their supply chains, for example. It was their supply chains. It was no one else's supply chain. It was theirs. You know, you'd look on a big construction site with a big name, you know, maybe 500 people working on it, maybe 10 people out of those 500 were on the payroll of the name on the fence.
Yes.
Everyone else was on other payrolls. And you probably found that there was a major subcontractor who maybe had more subcontractors. So there was three or four payrolls. And out of those 500 people, there could be nearly 30 payrolls operating.
Correct.
Barmy way to run an industry. and so, it is absolutely barmy. But people don't accept responsibility. That's what they've created. And that, for me, is the barrier to change, is not accepting responsibility for the things that you do. What I would like to see is a little bit more ongoing, regular inspection work taking place in the process of construction, where they're collecting the evidence to show things are being done properly. Yeah. You know, otherwise, you know, if you can't put forward a case that this building is safe, you know, this building is clad in something or other, what's the building safety regulator going to do? He's going to say, well, actually, let's do some destructive testing here. Let's take some of these panels off and see what's behind it, because unless you could prove to me that it's been done properly with fire breaks, etc., I'm not going to take it. Why should I take your word you've got a record of screwing up 15 tower blocks. So what's different? Prove to me you're different, because this is the culture change we need to get to. Show me you're behaving differently now to what you've done for the last 30 years.
What comes next, Chris, in terms of getting the job done?
I still think there's a long way to go yet before people start to see the benefit of doing it the new way, because there'll always be this tug. It's this rubber band effect. You know, you pull the band, people want to go back to what they always know and what they've always done. But we've got to break the rubber band and say, now you're in a new place.
Correct.
You know, you can let go of the other end, because that's where we're going to start from and build on that and build on that and build on that. So we move forward. I always think the industry, every time we make an improvement, it's going up with snakes and ladders. You know, the more ladders you go up in the industry, you know frameworks and Egan and Latham and all of this, as you go up the board, they all get a bit scared. They're looking for the first snake they can find to get back down to the start, because that's where they're comfortable with, you know. So try and jump on a snake and get back to square one, because we all know the confrontational way, that's where we're happy. You know, when you start doing these things differently, we're unhappy because we're out of our comfort zone. So, yeah, we just got to live with it, I'm afraid. And but getting new people into the industry, I think, is important. But I also think it's very important that things like Building Safety Act, Golden Thread, all this should be being built into the curriculum of students now in university.
Absolutely.
Because they have to come out expecting to be working on this and seeing it in practice in the firms they're going to be joining. And unless there's no point taking a load of people out of the universities, putting them into the workplace, and then have to retrofit them, so to speak, to do this.
Exactly. You know, the Building Safety Act for me is a game changer. It's where everything that we thought needed to happen is now capable of happening. I don't think the industry's ready, like you say. I think the next generation have a real role to play. Technology has a role to play, but it's about people. It's about culture. And let's just hope, Chris, you know, you did an amazing stint at CIOB. I think your voice is still very valid and valuable in the conversation we're having today. So let's just hope that even after this great conversation with you, we can still inspire the industry to change and step up to what is now the legal requirement. I think you're right. It shouldn't have come to this, but the fact that it has, and we're all here, I think we need to step up. But thank you, Chris, for your time and your wisdom. And of course, your smile as always.
Well, thank you very much indeed. It's been very enjoyable talking to you.